And welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here on the main feed. It's Friday, you know, it's the weekend. You're going to go out, have some drinks, have some food, and relax. Think about the week's toil. So that's why we're here.
Or you're going to go to work tonight and deal with Black Friday customers.
I mean, that is a choice that you've made, Sandra, over the years. I'm Kenny, I'm here with Sandra. Hi, Sandra. Happy Black Friday.
Hi, Kenny. Happy Black Friday. No, honestly, like I'm happy that I just didn't work earlier in the day because the masses tend to burn themselves out by midday. And so by the time I get to work tonight, most people will have done their crazy, like, we need to buy all of the deals shopping. And we're angry that liquor doesn't go on sale because it's a state regulated commodity. And it should be fairly okay by the time I get there. So fingers crossed that it's a better day than yesterday at the store.
I'm still confused as to why America allows Black Friday to happen. Like, the brawl. And also, you see people running at stuff and you're like, but they don't know what the price is yet. They're just grabbing things. How do they know what the price is of them all?
No, they do. Because, I mean, a lot of this stuff is advertised. Like, I mean, it's been ingrained into our culture, just like paying for healthcare. You receive ads from the time you're a child and you're like, Black Friday sales, you can get this television for $20, but we only have one in stock in any of the 50 stores across the country, so come into our store to see if we have this one. And sometimes the deals are good, but like the quantity of stuff that has like the really, really super good prices is so limited that you have to brave a mob, and that's how people get trampled and die. And I'm not exaggerating, like people get trampled and die. So that's a whole thing. And they've had to kind of start, you know, like developing policies so that people don't actually perish on Black Friday. I mean, capitalism kills, I think, is the message. Not that I'm in a mood or anything, but I totally am. So apologies, everyone. I mean, the holidays.
I guess my whole question was, why don't you just like not deal with them? Like, why don't you just like, apart from work, just be like, I'm just not doing the holidays. Like, just don't do them.
Well, because I have a family that would like, it's a whole situation. Like, I can't just avoid going and seeing my family. I like seeing my family. It's just like the pressure of it.
Yeah, you don't do well with pressure at all.
No.
With anything.
Especially not during December when everything's like a whole situation. So, yeah, I mean, that's part of why I don't like the holidays. It's like the pressure of all of the sides of my family and having to get off work and having screaming matches with my boss about having to take off work to go see my family because they prioritize seeing their family over me seeing mine. And it's working retail has not helped my love of the holidays.
I mean, I said I'm going to be spending my first ever Christmas away from my mum, which is very weird. And she, what was I was watching?
How is your mom handling this?
Okay, to be fair, very well for her.
Because you like, do spend a lot of time with your mom. Like, so it's not like you never see her or anything.
Yeah, I tried that, Sandra. I tried that whole line. I was like, you know, like, Steve's mom never gets to, like, doesn't really get to see me or Hulk that often. Like, you get to see us all the time, and I see you all the time. She was like, that doesn't matter, Kenneth. It's Christmas Day. I should be seeing my son, my only son. And that kind of chat. And then something that was on TV recently, and it was like, it was about, like, you know, oh, I was watching a Drag Race UK thing, and it was about a mom and child not seeing the mom so much, and my mom just went, well, I know how that feels this year. I'm like, for fuck,
oh,
calm
gosh,
down.
Are you serious? Like, does your mom realize that she sees you like all the time? I see my parents maybe once a month, maybe.
I know, but like, it's not really work hanging out with my mom. She's just fun.
No, like, she is fun. I love your mom. She's great.
She's like, yeah. I think if she was more work, I wouldn't do it. But
well, and my parents, like, it's not like I even mind hanging out with them. I actually do like seeing them. It's just because of my work schedule and because they're so busy. Like, they have way more of a social life than I do at this point. So it doesn't really work out to see each other, even though we live only 20 minutes away.
Well,
But
my mom comes and sees me twice a week after work, and because she
right.
works like 20 minutes away, so I guess it's kind of easier that way. But yeah, so,
One
but.
cool thing though, like my brother actually yesterday, because I was working yesterday, right? Like all day. It was not a good day. Like I hadn't eaten anything. One of the registers went down when it was super busy. People like it should be illegal to ask people, "Oh, how'd you get the short stick working Thanksgiving? Thanks so much for working though." I'm like, "I appreciate your thanks, but also I resent you for coming in. You're the reason I'm here today." So, it's like a whole, you have to maintain your demeanor. And like, there was a moment yesterday where my happy customer service demeanor did kind of slip because I hadn't eaten anything and it was 2 p.m. and it was like a whole thing. But the day got better after I ate some food. And then I ended up feeling okay enough to stay late. Like, I stayed half an hour late, kind of basically to milk the clock, honestly, because I was like, there is some stuff to do. And I've been here for 8.5 hours anyway, so might as well make it 9. And it turned out to be a good thing that I stayed because my brother actually drove way out of his way on the chance that I would still be at work and came in to say hi. And I don't get to see him very often. He lives about an hour away. So he was on his way home from like our family Thanksgiving that I didn't get to attend. And I got to see him, which was pretty great. So I was like,
There
I'm
you
trying
go.
to end this day on a thankful note.
But we should actually mention that happy Thanksgiving to everybody in America. Where I was actually listening to Grado talk about this on his podcast, Wrestling Daft, today. Where like you guys have Thanksgiving, which is kind of like the Christmas meal a month early, and I'm jealous of
Kinda,
that.
yeah.
I'm jealous of that. I feel like there's not much of American stuff that I would take, like lack of healthcare and massive racial inequality, but I would happily take Thanksgiving on as
And
an
it's kind of a
extra.
nice, like it's kind of a nice low pressure holiday where you just like eat a bunch of food and chill out, and most people watch sports or whatever. Like that's kind of what you do on Thanksgiving. I've worked most of the Thanksgivings that I can remember in recent history, so I don't do a ton for it, but it's nice.
Well, so I've decided that I'm going down to see Steve on Christmas Eve, for a couple of days, and I am going to take Hulk on the train, and I've decided I'm going to dress Hulk as an elf on the train
Aww.
because it's Christmas Eve, and I feel like people want to see him be festive, so he'll just sit and look angry that he's being dressed up against his will. But in reality, he's treated so well that he doesn't really like to stand on. He's treated
Does
so
he
well
really
that
mind being dressed up, though?
he doesn't like a hat. I mean, the other day Becca did try and put a crown on his head outside a
I did
castle.
see the crown pictures. I was going to ask about that.
So the whole idea was Becca had this crown and she was like, "Oh, we should totally go to Mugdut Country Park in Glasgow, and we can go to this castle and we can get a photo of Hulk in a crown because he's the Golden Prince." And I was like, "Great idea, 100% up
Golden
for this
Prince, Angel
one."
Bear sent from heaven. Yes, I'm
Yep,
familiar.
that is him. And usually he's like very easygoing. Like, he'll just do whatever you want. He's not that difficult to deal with. And so she's trying to put the crown on him, and first of all, there's loads of dogs around at this area, so we had to wait for them to go away. And then one of the dogs like tried to bite Hulk a wee bit,
Oh no.
and the old woman just thought this was really cute, and I was like, "Do that again, I'll kick him." But
Like malicious bite or like play
just like
bite?
a, well, I mean, a bite that I felt was just a lot, I felt was 10% more aggressive than I was comfortable with.
Okay.
So, so then Becca couldn't get the crown on, so I was like, I'll do it. So I put the crown on, and then all we wanted him to do was sit with the crown on, and then we would take the photo, and then he could go. And as soon as the crown went on, he just like planked in protest. Then I tried to pick him up, and then he rolled over because he was just like, "I'm not a performing monkey for you people. I'm not doing this." And then we
He
got.
was like, "I'm not your doll. Do not dress me."
Exactly. So we got 5 seconds of him sitting, and that was where those two photos came from.
I was going to say, because you did successfully get a couple photos. I imagine Becca takes like 1,000 photos a day, though. So.
She does. I mean, she is a master at taking photos. She knows where to position the treats. She knows where to position everything so that the dogs are. It's very well done. So, but then we ended up having to feed Hulk his lunch in a car park, and he was just so bewildered by it all. He's like, "Why am I eating food in a car park? Why am I eating out of a bowl in a car park?" And so he ate half of it, and then was just like, "I'm not eating the rest. I'm not an animal. I'm not. He's people."
I mean, you are literally an animal, but.
I did. I mean, you say that last night. He was so well behaved yesterday, and then he was lying. He was in bed with me, and he was lying on the left hand pillow with his head on the pillow, full body down like a person, and then I just decided to tuck him in, and
Aww.
he didn't move for 4 hours.
I love when
So
you send me pictures of him sleeping like a human. He's so cute.
he is. So yeah, but anyway, we should talk about wrestling because we're here to talk about wrestling.
Probably.
There was wrestling stuff this week.
It happened.
It did happen, but I mean, we were going to talk a little bit about the. Because I'd watched the Broken Skull sessions with The Undertaker, and I lied to everybody. I said this in the live stream with Ollie. I lied to everybody. Like, when I'd put that tweet out, but like, oh, you know, imagine how hard that was for me to watch it, but it was really good. You should go check it out, whatever. I kind of put it over. But
It
I
was so
had.
hard that you didn't actually watch it.
Yeah, I just didn't watch it. But then I was like, I'd watched Raw, and I really liked Raw. So, like, it was like 4:50 in the morning. I wasn't that tired. I was like, I might just watch it. Like, I should just watch it. And then. It, like, I expected to be more annoyed at it than I was, but I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good. And, like, I get it. Like, I appreciate people who are angry on my behalf. But, like, at the end of the day, he was offered a ton of money to take a new contract. He took it. He can't basically tell them to fuck off just to do these shows with me. Like, that's just not how it's going to work. He's not going to end a 35-year relationship for that. So, you know, I think he did. I think he went as far as he could with it, you know. Well, I know he did, but then, you know, they signed him to all this money, so they have to use him somehow. So they did this. So I thought it was good, but I showed you part of the when he talked about his retirement. He talked about, you know, the he was going to retire after the Triple H match at WrestleMania 28. He thought, and then he was going to retire after the Lesnar match, and then he was going to retire after the Roman Reigns match. But you watched a little bit of it. What did you make of him talking about kind of his own retirement and kind of talking about the stuff that we kind of say about him and the fact that he's aware of it?
Yeah, it is interesting because obviously, like, I am a critic of The Undertaker, shall we say? Like, he is not my favorite performer. So it was interesting for me watching this because I think it did simultaneously make him a lot more likable to me because he is aware of the things that I have grievances about him always coming back. He seems to know that not all of his performances as of late have been amazing because they haven't been. He seems to know that his body is giving out on him. He seems to know that I think he got stuck because he said that he never wanted to be someone who went too long. And he actually got kind of a wistful look in his eye when he was like, and I came back and did this. And I was like, oh man, like I am that guy now. Like I am that guy that came back and I am that guy that came back and can't do it anymore. And it was interesting hearing him talk about that and know that. But I think that kind of reinforces his, I really want to have a good story on the way out. Because he said that. And we've heard that from other people before, right? That The Undertaker wants to have one last really great story or one last really great match to go out on. And like, honestly, in my opinion, I stand firm. I think that he should have retired after the Roman Reigns match. I think that would have made absolute sense, even if it wasn't the best match in the world. I think the symbolism was there, him leaving his shit in the ring. Him saying goodbye, and he even says on the special, like, that was more powerful than any speech I was gonna give, because that's not The Undertaker, right? Like, giving long speeches is not his strong point. Having big iconic like visual moments is more what The Undertaker has been about. So that moment would have been more powerful than that. But then of course he's gonna do a favor for Vince and he's gonna come back and they want him to draw ratings and da 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 da. And like, I get wanting to have a big story to go out on. I also feel like he needs to listen to his limitations and realize that the longer he goes, the more tragic it seems if he can't do a good thing. And it did actually make me want to see, like, for the guy, I want to see him have one last good thing. And you and I were kind of bandying this about as we were texting when I was watching it. And like, I honestly think if I just like fantasy book, which I don't do very often, but like for me, I think the ideal going out story for him might be Undertaker versus Fiend, because the Fiend is so history based and like focused on story details that I absolutely love. And I think that he could do an easier match with the Fiend because he wouldn't have to bump around a whole lot. He wouldn't have to do much. It doesn't have to be long. You can have shenanigans. You can have him like throw lightning at the Fiend, have the Fiend like catch the lightning and, you know, like absorb his lightning powers like he did before. And then you can have the Fiend basically murder the Undertaker and take the torch from him. And I don't know, like I think that could actually be a really good story to go out on, and the match doesn't have to be super epic, and it's probably the best case scenario that they will never do. Like for the guy, I want him to have a last big moment, but for the guy also, I don't want him to keep prolonging this into more and more sadness because he just can't go anymore. So it was interesting knowing that he is self-aware about that kind of stuff, but it's like, and he even mentioned his ego. He's like, yeah, ego's part of it. Like, but sometimes you just have to know that it's past time, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, he ended up in the mid to late 2000s having these epic kind of stories with Batista and then Edge and then Shawn Michaels and Triple H. So, you know, that's almost like 6 or 7 years of really strong stuff. And then I think that maybe made everyone who's a fan of his kind of like, well, you know, imagine what's going to happen when he has his last story and he's going to retire. And none of them have really, like, I mean, the Roman Reigns one we joke about is like, you know, it's my yard. No, it's my yard. Like, that's not a story. That's not a good
story. It wasn't
story.
Great, but it did have a great visual at the end.
I mean,
if you
want to
like relive it in video packages and stuff.
I mean, the visual of him putting the gloves and the hat down was great, but nothing else about that was special. You know, even like the match was boring, the build was boring, and then even when he did the Wyatt match, I mean, the thing about the Wyatt, if they did do Fiend and Undertaker as the last match, and I kind of like the idea of the symbolism of like, you know, Undertaker kind of like grabbing, you know, the Fiend because he's got to try, and the Fiend just like, you know, thinking for a second about whether he actually wants to put him down and then mm-hmm. doing it is a great visual. And then plus Bray Wyatt can talk about, you know, he went for the Undertaker before and he was unprepared. You know, he wasn't prepared enough, so he wasn't ready to sort of take him down. And now he is, and that kind of stuff. So I think he's the best one that fits it because there's just nobody else. I mean, like Undertaker, AJ Styles, that just doesn't seem like, I mean, 10 years ago, that would have been good. But now...
Right. But there are a lot of things that would have been good 10 years ago that wouldn't necessarily be now. And I think the only other one, if you wanted to go spooky and supernatural with it, would be like Demon versus Deadman. But Finn Balor's not the Demon anymore. He's Prince Balor tearing it up in NXT. So that just doesn't fit, you know?
Yeah, so I don't really know what he does. But at least he's self-aware. And I hope that he did say on it, he said, you know, I get to write my story and I'll write it how I want to write it. And Austin even kind of pushes him and says, like, you know, well, what is the story? Like, when are you going to wind this down? And he kind of, it feels like he knows it has to come, but I wonder, I mean, I remember speaking to somebody fairly close to him who had said that he really wants to have one last big match where it felt, mm-hmm. you know, special. And that's just not come up yet. I mean, the closest thing he's done... The best thing he's done in the last 2 years was the tag match at Extreme Rules when we had the stuff with him and Drew. That was the best thing that he's done because there was actually a kind of iconic moment, you know, that whole thing of like Drew being mental and Taker, or was it Undertaker looking demonic and Drew just kind of coming into shot behind him?
Mm-hmm.
And they had that whole thing. Like, that was good, but everything else has just kind of been the greatest hits tour. And it's like, him, you know, you don't want to go and see Bon Jovi singing Living on a Prayer anymore. You've seen it 100 times. So.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I would probably still go see Bon Jovi sing Living on a Prayer, but like if they can still do it. And The Undertaker's greatest hits are not looking like greatest hits anymore.
No. And because nowadays, yeah. But that's the thing. If the character work was great, it could totally masquerade average wrestling matches.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, see The Fiend. Like The Fiend's not having great wrestling matches. He's just a great character, and that's why it masquerades the wrestling matches not being, you know... five stars. I know that it's weird to get annoyed about star ratings, and I'm not annoyed about it, but I know Meltzer had graded the men's War Games match a 4.5 and the women's one a 4.25. So for me, as someone who, and I try to not be hyperbolic about like women's wrestling unless I mean it, I just don't see how anyone can think that men's War Games match was better than the women's one. Like that, the one of the instances where I just think that there's no way. The women's one was much better to me. So I think he got that the wrong way around.
Yeah, I mean, strong disagree with Dave Meltzer on that one, but I don't know. Like, War Games isn't for me. I enjoyed parts of the women's one more than I enjoyed parts of the men's one. War Games is never going to be for me. So it's fine. Like, I don't really pay that much attention to his star ratings because it's his opinion. We're allowed to differ. It's fine.
You're still friends.
I mean... He did refuse to shake my hand when I tried to say hi to him that one time because he went off to talk to someone else, but there's that.
I mean, he's very socially awkward.
Oh, no, he is. It wasn't like an intentional snub. It was like, I think it was David and I were waiting to say hi to him and like meet him or whatever. And he saw someone else to talk to and just like walked away from both of us.
I think he just has one of those things where he doesn't know people. He's just very nervous. He just kind of scours the room like the Terminator trying to find somebody he knows. Also,
Like I've probably done the same thing to people before and not realized it, but it's funny because it's like I just remember that. I did meet him in Vegas, I think, when I was with
Yes, you
you.
did. Yeah, you did. You did. I did want to make mention that the network shows, you know, they do the whole like, you know, the top watch shows of the week, and the Broken Skull Sessions with Undertaker did better than War Games, which is interesting. Survivor Series was number one, Broken Skull Sessions was number two, and War Games pay-per-view was number three. So that was the top
Doesn't
three.
necessarily surprise me though, because Broken Skull Sessions, like a spoken word interview in long form with The Undertaker, is a pretty big deal to people and would be very interesting to see. And that's, you know, would have been a really nice thing to see in the UK.
Or War Games. I mean, I just don't think I can really offer an unbiased opinion on that comment.
I mean, I figure that you can't. That's why, like, I mean, for either of us to say anything about it is kind of like, well, yeah, it would be. Austin did a great job, though, as interviewer from
He
the
did.
parts of
He
it that I watched.
did a great job. So,
And I think having him be the one to interview Undertaker on the network, like, I'm glad that it was Austin, and I'm glad that they didn't have, like, Jericho do it, or, I don't know, Bruce Pritchard, or someone like that. Like, I think Austin was the right choice.
But however, if they want to get Le Champion to interview The Undertaker, I will watch the shit out of that.
I mean, that could be something.
Okay, so let's talk about NXT and AEW. What one do you want to talk about first?
I don't know. You ask me this every week, and I
So you
can
should
never
know by now. Just
decide.
pick one. Just say one.
Let's talk about NXT first. I liked it better, so.
So NXT was, it was the big fallout from Takeover and Survivor Series. They won Survivor Series, so we got a big kind of celebration. We've got that Josiah Williams guy doing a sort of rap for the whole roster coming out, and they're all celebrating. And then Adam Cole and the Undisputed Era come out, and they basically talk them down, saying the only reason the NXT was successful at the weekend was because of Undisputed Era. And that then brings out, you know, Ciampa and Dijakovic and Keith Lee and this whole thing, and Balor comes out. But what did you make of the celebration overall of the baby faces coming out and sort of being happy that everybody won, and then the Undisputed Era coming out to crash the party?
I thought it was fun. It was a pretty fun opening segment. Like, it was interesting because the first time I sort of like cursory watched AEW and NXT was I was watching the live stream with you and Ollie, and then I had AEW on one screen, and then I had NXT on another screen. And your AEW feed was like 15 seconds or so ahead of mine. So you guys were reacting to things that hadn't happened yet, which was weird. But there was just a lot of celebration happening because AEW also opened with a celebration. So I was like, wow, everyone's super happy tonight. But I thought it was kind of a fun way to open NXT, and I thought it was edited in an interesting way. Like the dude was rapping, and then they'd show like flashes of Shayna Baszler, or like flashes of Adam Cole, or flashes of Roderick Strong winning, or whatever. And I thought it was pretty fun, like getting the roster together and being like, hey, fuckers, we beat you, Raw and SmackDown, because we're better. And I liked Undisputed Era coming out to kind of crash the party and ruin it and say, hey, the only reason that you won, or that we won, basically, is because of the Undisputed Era. Without us, you would not have had anything. I genuinely wanted Shayna Baszler to come out and attack Adam Cole and be like, look, bitch, what are you talking about? Sadly, that did not happen, but I would have loved it because he's like, we're the champions in NXT. We hold all the gold. We're the most important. And I was like, what about Shayna? I think she would be not very happy about those comments because she won her match too. But I get that they don't want to set up anything with Shayna like joining the Undisputed Era, so it can never happen. And it's just a pipe dream in my head. But yeah, I thought that was pretty fun, and I thought Tommaso Ciampa going kind of toe-to-toe verbally with Adam Cole was fun too. Like saying, you know, yeah, the Undisputed Era is on top now, but this was only a step. Like you guys got your asses beaten at War Games, and that's going to continue because Daddy's home and he wants Goldie again. And I mean, Keith Lee just looks like a fucking star now, which is awesome. Like him saying, like, hey, yeah, Dominic and I are gonna beat you for the tag team titles and let's start that right now. I mean, that didn't happen, but I liked him stepping up and being confident and being like, yeah, no, we're the best. And the Undisputed Era, you know, their time to fall is nigh. So I don't know, the opening segment, it worked for me because it brought a lot of stories together and it makes NXT feel like a fully formed world that I love. So I think it accomplished quite a bit.
It was a fun opening segment. I liked the Ciampa Balor stuff at the end, setting up the main event. And I mean, the celebration was a little bit hokey, but celebrations are hokey. Like, they just tend to be. But the Undisputed Era coming out was great.
I'm okay with hokey. Dance around. You want a thing.
I feel it probably would
work better for me if I knew who this rapper was. Like, I'm cursorily, like, familiar with him existing, but he's not someone that, like, is in my zeitgeist at this point. I mean, so he's just a dude who's rapping.
At first I was like, if I see Tommaso Ciampa dancing, I'm turning off this show. Like, if I see that, I'm done. Luckily, they did not do that. The top guys were not dancing buffoons, which is good. So, you know, you always keep your top stars to not do that. Which led straight in, actually, to the Undisputed Era, Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish against Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic. But very early on, Keith Lee's, like, throwing Fish on the outside to O'Reilly, and O'Reilly's supposed to catch him, and he kind of catches it, but kind of doesn't, and basically takes Bobby Fish out of the match, and then Roderick Strong is kind of in with his street clothes on. Now, we were kind of watching the Joe feed on Wednesday, and I was kind of like, why is Roderick Strong in here? But then, I mean, they kind of we've seen this on Retro Raw before, where, like, the Outlaws were the champions, and then, like, X-Pac jumped in for somebody else. So, you know, it's known to happen. It's something that does happen sometimes. So, the thing is, imagine the idea that Roderick Strong was out here and was not supposed to be in this match and had not learned anything for this match. And watch how well he does.
Oh, yeah. Like, because the first time I watched it, I was kind of, like, watching both shows and watching you and Ollie and, like, not really paying super close attention to either one. We were all like, why is Roderick Strong in this match? It doesn't make sense. It's supposed to be Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly because they're supposed to be defending their tag team championships. And it didn't really make sense. And Roderick Strong's, like, wrestling in his slacks and stuff. And it still makes absolutely zero sense how they can establish that or how they can invoke the Freebird rule mid-match, because they've had it before. I remember where Sanity was supposed to fight someone, and I think they were saying that it was going to be like Alexander Wolfe and Killian Dane, but then, like, Eric Young stepped in at the last minute, or maybe Eric Young was supposed to do it and Killian Dane stepped in the last minute. I can't remember what the situation was, but I know they've done that before. But it was before the match started. It wasn't mid-match after the bell rang. Oh, someone got injured and we're going to substitute. Like, really, according to the rules of wrestling, and you know how I feel about rules of wrestling, Kenny, according to the rules of wrestling, the match should have been over, or Kyle O'Reilly would have had to, like, go on his own or something like that. Like, if Bobby Fish is too injured to continue, then either that's a ref stoppage or he's taken out and Kyle O'Reilly has to fend for himself. So it really makes no sense to insert Roderick Strong here. Like, it would have made more sense logistically for them to just do, because obviously they didn't want to switch the titles because they were not planning on switching the titles last night or Wednesday night. Time is strange and weird. But it would have made more sense to do, like, a count out and say, oh, the Undisputed Era retained by count out, those dastardly baddies. But they also had so much TV time for this match. Like, I don't know what they would have done to fill the next 20 minutes, because this match went, like, I want to say it was like 26 minutes or so into the NXT replay when the match ended. So it went like a half an hour or so if you include the commercial break. So it was a long match and it was great. Like, I'm super impressed with Roderick Strong. I'm super, like, obviously we know he's a great wrestler, but, like, this just proves that he's a great wrestler, because if he was able to go in there and do that just on a moment's notice and without any pre-planning or anything like that, like, he might have been familiar with what Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly were planning to do, but I'm sure he didn't sit down and, like, plan the match out with them because it wasn't his match. Why would he? So I don't know. It was a really impressive performance from Roderick Strong, but, like, you kind of have to call attention to the fact that the rules didn't make sense.
The best part of the whole match was, of course, when Keith Lee tackled Adam Cole and he flipped into the crowd. Like, it was so good.
He just went flying. It was incredible. I think you say that's the best part of the match. It was a great part of the match. My favorite part of the match was Kyle O'Reilly turning a chokeslam into attempt into a triangle, because that transition was beautiful. And then him holding onto Dominik Dijakovic lifting him up as though to powerbomb him, and then powerbombing him as he does a chokeslam to Roderick Strong.
That was pretty great. I mean, I'm just saying,
like,
I think
that was my favorite.
I think in 10 years you're still going to see that tackle sort of clipped.
Oh, I'm sure you will. Like, I think it was more visually spectacular, but, like, you know how I feel about holds and transitions.
You
and
do
things.
Love a transition.
It was my favorite.
But Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong get the win when they hit Dijakovic with the total elimination. They get the win. We should mention that Mauro Ranallo was not on commentary. He is supposed to be back next week, apparently. Like, I know Meltzer was saying that the situation is pretty bad and he's feeling pretty rough, and he was feeling rough going into it. And so Corey Graves, he sent a tweet to Dave Meltzer saying he was an unapologetic liar.
Liar.
Mm-hmm. And then 2 days later, he issued an apology. So who's the liar then? Because I'm confused.
Yeah, I'm going to go with it's not Dave Meltzer. I'm going to go with Corey Graves is a cretin. I mean, like, I don't know the guy, but he just comes across as like a self-important buffoon. So I'm not a fan of the way that he presents himself online, and I'm not a fan of him, I don't know, like, issuing an apology so late after the fact and not taking tweets down. And like, I don't know. I'm not a fan of that, especially when he's like calling Dave Meltzer a liar, saying like, because he's indicating like, oh, my tweet had nothing to do with it, or da 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 da. And obviously it did. Like, even if he didn't mean it maliciously, even if, as he says, he just meant to stir up some controversy, to have something to talk about, like, dude, even if you fucked up, like, just say I fucked up.
I feel but the idea, so he wanted to work an angle with Mauro Ranallo. Well, tell him.
Shouldn't he have talked to Mauro Ranallo about that? Especially knowing that Mauro Ranallo has like a lot of mental health issues and was having a bad day going into the weekend and tweeted that. Like, I mean, if I'm having a bad mental health day and I tweet about it, and then if you're like, oh, I think I'm going to start an angle with Sandra, I'm going to call her a piece of shit online and be like, she's horrible at her job. That's not a good way to go about things, especially if you don't talk to me about it first, right?
Noted.
Noted. Yes. Like, just saying, don't do that, please. So yeah, and I mean, like, there are things that did he mean it maliciously? Like, did he mean to drive Mauro Ranallo into more of a downward spiral? Probably
no,
not. Like, that would be a super malicious thing to do. And I don't want to say, like, he's just an asshole who wants Mauro Ranallo to have serious mental health consequences. I don't think that was it. But I think that it was an oversight that shouldn't have happened. And I think it's an oversight that deserved an apology a little bit more forthcoming than he did. Like, I appreciate the fact that he apologized. I think that's a good thing. I don't want to be like, his apology is not enough and it's never going to be good enough. But like, dude, like, you shouldn't have done it. Just be like, I fucked up. I fucked up.
Also,
have
on the
some compassion.
I hope he comes back. I really do. But then, yeah, like, this is the second time this has happened. Second time it's happened, and like, it's, yeah, it sucks. I hope he comes
back.
Well,
and like, I hope that he, you know, takes some time off and is okay and comes back next week and is like, I needed some time. You never know with these sorts of things. Like, you just never know how long it's going to take. You never know how long you need to be away. Like, I've been there. I have taken months off of work because I couldn't get out of bed before. It fucking sucks. So I feel for Mauro. I would love to hear him back. I hope that he does come back. I hope that this is kind of a lesson to other people in, like, I don't know, having a little more compassion and not punching down to someone who's already pretty low.
Yeah, so hopefully he's back next week. We also on the show got Candice LeRae and Dakota Kai, who had a really fun match. I mean, they did have this horrific spot where they both tried to, like, hit on the ring apron, but they both missed and just fell. Like,
that was
like, on
scary.
The ground. Like, I mean, I know sometimes you're going to, like, but that, you know, that there should maybe be a conversation about, you know, those sort of spots should probably not be planned unless you're, like, so comfortable with each other that, like, you're going to nail it. Not that I'm telling them how to wrestle, but, yeah, it just looked really dangerous and, like, oh, fuck. Because, you know, if that had been, like, a couple, like, 1 inch to the side, that could have been, like, a really bad neck injury and stuff, so.
There were a few things on the show that were, like, kind of, I mean, Bobby Fish obviously getting thrown and got injured and taken out of the match, and then, like, you know, the Candice and Dakota Kai stuff. And I think, didn't Leah Rush had a pretty, like, nasty dive too?
He did, yeah.
And I think in Dominik Dijakovic, I think when he did that cool, like, triangle powerbomb chokeslam thing, like, Kyle O'Reilly landed on his knee kind of weird too.
It was the night of weird injuries. But I thought that Candice and Dakota Kai, obviously this was just kind of the beginning and Candace is trying to kind of fight the corner of her pal Tegan Knox, but like I thought that the match was decent. I'm sure we're gonna get more of it, but Dakota Kai, she works as a heel a lot more than I thought she was gonna. Like, if you told me 2 months ago Dakota Kai's gonna go heel, I'd be like, oh, okay, who cares? But she's really good, so I think the alignments work for me, and I'm looking forward to seeing how much more of a dick Dakota Kai becomes.
She is good. I loved her coming out with the knee brace that she took from Tegan Knox. Like, she kept it like a trophy. It actually reminded me, and a lot of this reminds me of Tommaso Ciampa turning on Johnny Gargano, right? Like, Tegan Knox and Dakota Kai haven't been tag team champions, and they haven't been together as long as Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa in NXT, but they've touched on their history a whole bunch of times, right? So when Candace was giving her pre-match promo and talking about how Tegan Knox is like a sister to her, she might as well be blood, then I just get the feeling that Candice LeRae, of all people, is going to have an extra problem with someone like Dakota Kai doing this, because she's been through it before. The best man at her wedding turned on her husband and caused them all sorts of problems, right? And I'm kind of glad that they didn't bring that up, because I don't want Candice's story to be always tied to Johnny Gargano. But I think it's one of those character details that, if you know it, it makes this even more interesting, right? Because of course Candice LeRae is going to be like, no, fuck this, not again. I'm not letting this happen to someone else I care about. I'm going to stand up for this person. And the match went quite a while. Like, it kept going and going and going, and I expected it to be shorter than it was, but it was awesome. So I wasn't complaining that it kept going. And then for it to kind of end in a disqualification was interesting, because it was like Dakota tried everything she could. Like, Candace kicked out of multiple finishers, and Candace is like, no, fuck this. I have all the heart in the world. I'm going to keep kicking out, because I am not letting you get one up on me after what you did. And so for Dakota to just be like, fine, fuck it, I want to hurt you, was super mean. And I think that we will get more of this, and I'm here for more of this, and I think it's a great story. And Rhea Ripley coming out afterwards to like avenge or to help Candace, right?
Yes, yeah, Rhea came out. After the match, Dakota Kai was basically gonna cave Candace's head in, and Rhea Ripley came out to make sure that didn't happen.
It looked like Candace did like hurt her face or something. It looked like she had some blood in her mouth and was kind of like spitting and that kind of stuff. So I don't know what happened there, if she actually got hurt or if it was just a little thing. I'm not sure. But Dakota Kai as an evil, evil baddie is definitely working for me. I think her theme music is a bit lackluster, but like, she had to change it because her old theme is so happy. And they just kind of went with like generic angsty music, I suppose. But her, like, her big hair and her demeanor and all of it is, it's working. I like the way she's carrying herself, and Candice LeRae is such a good baby face, and I think she's, you know, not coming across as an idiot or as someone who's just naive. Like, she's fiery, and she's gonna stand up for what she believes in, and I think all of it kind of works for me. And Rhea Ripley being like a good guy who's willing to be a friend and help out her pal, I think is a character shift for Rhea Ripley for sure. Like, especially because Rhea Ripley is the one that like fucked up Tegan Knox in the first place in story, obviously, because of their match in the Mae Young Classic. So for her to be on side with Candace here, I think is interesting.
We also saw later in the show, actually, after Xia Li had beaten Vanessa Bourne, that the Horsewomen were going to come down and kind of take her out. And then she was going to, trying to hold her own, but it didn't work. And then Baszler basically killed her and then bragged about Survivor Series. Then Rhea Ripley came out and, you know, they had a face-off, and Rhea ends up saying, you know, when you went face-to-face with me, I beat you, I'll do it again. And they face off, and it kind of feels like this is going to be the big title match. And do you think Rhea Ripley, is she getting the momentum together that you think would be needed to actually be the one to beat Shayna?
I think so, and I hope so. I think they're kind of building her as protector of the locker room, which is weird because she's young. Like, she hasn't been doing this that long. She's only a couple years like into WWE and that kind of stuff. But I think the way that she's been so dominant and so badass, and I mean, all of Survivor Series weekend, I think she was the star of it. So yeah, like, I think they're really getting behind her. They're throwing everything they have. She's 23 years old.
I mean, doesn't make you want to be sick.
It's disgusting how good she is at her age. And
she was born in the year that we began talking about Retro Raw.
96?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. She's a child. But she's great. Like, she's so good. And I think that everything they're doing with her is very, very right. And I think that she has stepped up. Like, it's not like they're giving her this big spotlight and momentum and she's not taking it and running with it. Like, they are giving her a chance, And she's absolutely running with it and looking dominant and badass. Kind of like when they got behind Becky Lynch. I don't think she's as big a star as Becky Lynch at this point yet, but when they got behind Becky Lynch and Becky took every opportunity and totally ran with it, like Rhea's doing the same thing. It's very different to other people who are put in a spotlight position and given loads of chances and just kind of fail to shine, I guess. Like Rhea Ripley's shining and she's incredible. And somebody has to take that title from Shayna because I don't want another Divas Championship just, given up because nobody is good enough to beat the champion. I think we've done that too many times with titles in NXT. I want someone to beat Shayna. And at this point, yes, I want it to be a Rhea Ripley. And I would believe it because Rhea does have Shayna's number. She hasn't been beaten by Shayna. And I think that's such a good story.
I think she is probably going to end up want to end up doing it. She feels that she does have, the momentum so far. So I like seeing her stand up to Shayna Baszler, and I look forward to seeing where it goes. I tell you what, I just on this show, who cares? Leo Rush versus Akira Tozawa, again.
I mean,
And then
it
also.
was a good match. I loved the match. What I don't understand is why Akira Tozawa is coming to NXT. He's wearing his Raw colors. He's wearing his Raw shirt because he's
He
a
has his
Raw
Raw graphic.
superstar. He has this Raw graphic. I have to cough really badly, so I apologize. I can barely talk right now. But why is he on NXT? I thought we weren't doing this cross-pollination thing between Raw and SmackDown and NXT.
I mean, yeah, this match was dull. Like, there's no story to it. It's just two guys having a wrestling match. There's nothing to it.
I
Leo
mean,
Rush.
I'm into the match. Like, I love Akira Tozawa and Lio Rush, and I think they're great. Like, I think they're really great. I enjoyed the hell out of this match. I just don't understand why it's happening here.
Yeah, but it's for me, I was just like bored, just really bored. None of it works for me. If I'd been watching this like just this show, I'd have gone to make a sandwich at this point. Like, I'm a story guy. I like stories or big characters, and these are just two very bland cruiserweights. That Leo Rush is supposed to be a babyface, but he feels more like a heel. He's got this really weird hairstyle. Akira Tozawa, just
I like
like,
his hair.
well, that says more about you, but like, it's atrocious. And like, Akira Tozawa, he's been around for so long, and he's not. He's when was the last time he did anything like properly? Like, when he was in Titus Worldwide or something.
I mean, that was super fun. I mean, he had really good matches with Buddy Murphy for the title. He faced Drew Gulak a bunch of times. Like, I love Akira Tozawa. I think he's great. My biggest issue with this is I don't understand why they have a Raw guy fighting for the Cruiserweight Championship when they have so many Cruiserweights on the NXT roster.
I mean,
And was this for the title?
it was, but we'll see what they do because there's a lot of people.
Why?
I don't know. Well, because
I
they
think
were
it had
they.
something to do with the pre-show that I didn't watch,
I think
probably.
it's because Leo Rush pinned the other guy in the pre-show match. He pinned
Oh, that
Kalisto.
actually makes sense.
So,
But
but like the
what
thing
doesn't
is,
make sense is like Akira Tozawa being a Raw person coming to NXT when Survivor Series season is
but
over.
actually the more important thing is that like you don't really need to convince like somebody like you who watched 205 Live and liked it. That's not who you really need to convince with this match. You've got the NXT audience who are a lot bigger, and you want to try and like bridge the gap a little bit. And I don't really feel like they've done that so far with the Cruiserweight. I mean, I love the match with Angel Garza because he feels like a character. He feels like he's going somewhere.
Well, and
But
they did talk about Angel Garza right before the match and kind of during the match, which also kind of nerfed the match a little bit because it was like we're clearly building toward more Lio Rush and Angel Garza. So why is he fighting Akira Tozawa today?
yeah, so we'll see if the Cruiserweight title. I mean, because I thought when the Cruiserweight title came over to NXT, it was going to kind of click immediately, and it clicked with the Garza Leo Rush match. But again, it was on a pre-show and at the pay-per-view, and it's guys who've fought for it before in 205 Live, who I guess like the other audience's only real knowledge of that is them being on the pre-show or whatever. So I don't know. I hope that they try and make some bigger name stars out of the Cruiserweights. That would be something that I would enjoy more of if they can, but we'll
I
see.
mean, maybe they just should have let Drew Gulak remain champion and be on NXT. Wouldn't that have been a lovely world?
And then the main event of the show was Finn Balor against Tommaso Ciampa, which obviously always happens at like the overrun point of the show, so it's by the time it's like 3 in the morning, I'm like, oh, I just want to go to bed. But these guys had a really good match. Ciampa's starting to really find his feet as a babyface and be able to work as like a badass babyface and not he doesn't feel like a sap. He doesn't feel like an idiot. He doesn't feel like a dumb babyface. He's just a bit of a badass. I think people kind of like that about him. So I enjoyed the match I was curious to see Finn Balor going over again. It's his second big win. Now he's come in and beat Ciampa and Riddle. And I mean, maybe there's an element of like, why is this older guy coming in and beating the two of the top guys? But it feels like there is a story. It doesn't feel like it's just unwarranted. But what did you make of the match? And were you surprised that Finn Balor went over?
I really loved the match, and I was a little surprised that Finn Balor went over, but not really. Like, I think Finn Balor needs to be established a little bit more in NXT again if he's going to be a big player there. Because Ciampa, obviously, like, I mean, the crowd loves Tommaso Ciampa. They're going to chant "Daddy's home." They're going to chant all this stuff. And there were some shenanigans, right? Like, Finn Balor did the DDT to Tommaso Ciampa on the title, and Jessica Carr kind of like hesitated because she was like, "Do I count this? Do I not count this? I don't know." Like, there was a title, but it was inadvertent, so I continued counting it. So it's not like it was like a completely clean win from Finn Balor. I think Tommaso Ciampa was protected a little bit, but I think Finn Balor needs the wins more. And I mean, you talk about like this is an older guy coming in and why is he beating people? But I've kind of come a long way in how I feel about veterans being useful in wrestling. Like, Finn Balor is an NXT veteran who I think is still incredibly useful in NXT because he can still go and he can still have these matches and he can bring an experience and a star presence from the past to kind of blend with the newer talent, right? Like, I know that I used to always be the person that was like, no, it should always be all new people and we should not have older people at all. But I think, like, I've really changed my mind on that in the past couple of years. I think Goldberg is the one who broke me because the Goldberg Brock Lesnar stuff was so incredible and it was such a good story. And it was like, oh, so you can bring in an audience from the past who knows these people as long as the story is compelling and good. Where I think this differs from the Undertaker discussion that we were having is that the Undertaker stuff that we've seen in the past few years has not been good and it has not been that compelling. And it's really just been based on nostalgia and not new stories. But if you're telling new stories with people, which they're doing with Finn Balor, and I think that's why it's good that he won, then he's absolutely valid. I mean, you can say the same thing about Rey Mysterio winning the United States title on Raw, right? That was a great moment. And yeah, Rey Mysterio has been around forever, but obviously he can still go and he can still have these matches and he can still have a great story. And the Rey and Dominic stuff is awesome. So that adds value to the show. And I think that Finn Balor being a big bad who like isn't on side with anyone. He's not on side with the Undisputed Era like we thought he might be. He's definitely not on side with Tommaso Ciampa. He's Prince Balor and he's going to just beat everyone up. And that's compelling to me. I love it. I think it's great.
I mean, we'll talk about AEW in a second, but the ratings for this week will not be out until Monday. But I think the NXT on the basis of Survivor Series and the Fallout probably will get the win again this week. But I'm curious how next week goes because next week, by all accounts, will probably be NXT back to being its own thing again. So I'm curious how that does. But I think that the shows for NXT and Survivor Series have helped it, and I think that they've got a good flow going. It'll be interesting to see where some of the kind of like Pete Dunne and secondary characters are going to go. Can Walter come back from his absolute job that he had to do?
I think we'll just ignore it. It was Survivor Series. He'll do his own thing.
Yeah, although I did hear like somebody anyway had sort of tried to explain to me what the WWE. The way they would look at the Walter thing, why it's a positive. And I was like, come on, you can't give me a positive. You can't make. I was like, explain it to me as if like you're selling it to me in your WWE. And they were like, you know, Walter's going to get to be in there with all the big stars and hang with them. He's going to get to be in there with Drew McIntyre. He's going to get to be in there with Braun Strowman. But Timmy gets eliminated.
He didn't hang with them. He lost 3 minutes.
But this is how they would pitch it. Is he gets to be in there and hang with them. And then when he gets eliminated, yeah, he's been eliminated. But nobody cares. Nobody remembers that Walter's been eliminated. They remember Walter and Braun Strowman facing off. They remember Walter and Drew McIntyre. And I'm like, that is how they would pitch it. That totally is how they would have pitched it.
That's how they would pitch it. But that's not how it worked at all.
But yeah, NXT, I think we can both use a thumbs up show.
Yeah, absolutely, thumbs up show. Is the Balor stuff working for you? You didn't say.
Yes, the Balor stuff is working for me. I like it. I'm just mentioning it because I know that like if it was another person, I think there would be people who'd be like, why is he beating Riddle and Ciampa? I'm not too sure if I would have had him beat Ciampa here, if I'm honest. Just because I feel like Ciampa's the next guy to go after Cole. But maybe it's Balor first. Maybe that's what's going to happen. But, you know, I think it's better on these shows to actually have a finish rather than do the, you know, the big main roster thing of like, let's have this big match, but we don't know who we want to win it. So I can't really see where Finn Balor is going next. I can't see who he's going up against. And that's kind of exciting because I think that...
how long is Johnny Gargano out?
We don't know. We have no idea. I will say that, and I said this on the pay-per-view review, and I want to say it again because I'm really thinking it more. The one thing I think Balor needs to do is I think he needs to change, for me, I want to see more changes in his entrance and the way he presents himself. Because I feel like in a lot of ways, he still presents the old Finn Balor, and I'd like to see more Prince stuff coming in and, you know,
Do you think that's good in a way, like the kind of thing that you talk about a lot, the character's not completely changing who they are and he's maintaining some continuity?
In some ways, but then also it's kind of like if he now is like, you know, fuck the fans, fuck the boys, and all that kind of stuff, then I don't see why he would be like, let's do a big hand thing, you know, like that's probably the only thing. But I think it's parts of it are fine. I don't know. I feel like I just want him to do something a bit more, like you know how like we talk about like wrestlers reinventing themselves, like Taker and Jericho and stuff. I like the idea of because who was it that was saying? Was it Jericho or somebody was talking recently on a podcast about how they used to always get a new pair of tights or a new pair of like trunks or whatever because then they knew that meant they would make a new figure of them. They'd make another one.
I know I've heard that. I can't remember who it
So they would just keep making
was.
money. So like, you know, with Balor, it's like Balor kind of you would it's the same Finn Balor you're really bringing out. I mean, I know that's minor, probably not a lot of people care about it. I think it's because when I was watching TakeOver, I really expected him to have some sort of like epic different entrance. But I mean, so I like what he's doing generally, and I'm looking forward to seeing who he's feuding with, whether it is Johnny Wrestling or maybe somebody like Pete Dunne.
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad about Finn Balor and Pete Dunne at all. I think that could be great. Like just introduce a grudge match. Like you can do it. Just have them be mad at each other.
And I mean, actually, so we don't have a takeover the night before the Royal Rumble. The next takeover is the one in February on February 16th in Portland. So,
Because they're doing a Worlds Collide, right?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
I love Worlds Collide.
No, I'm just it's we've just finished Survivor Series and now we're gonna have another brand
Oh,
versus brand.
that's a good point. It's not the best timed thing.
So like in maybe like a month we're gonna have NXT UK people invading NXT. I'm assuming. Anyway,
There's
so let's
already cross-pollination there, though. Yeah, that's kind of weird.
so over in AEW. Yeah, this opening segment, which was a celebration of Chris Jericho, the champion. Soul Train Jones was in the ring. He was doing the intro. We had inflatable animals. We had clowns. We had a bull. We had lots of stuff. People were shouting thank you at Jericho. He's got his own bubbly now called Little Bit of the Bubbly. He told this is one of my favorite things that a heel has done in so long. He told the crowd to look under their chair, and there was a card with a code for 50 cents off a Le Champion t-shirt, and he said that's coming out of my cut. I mean, so good.
50 cents. That's just amazing.
And then so the whole thing is like all the members of the Inner Circle are giving him gifts. So like Jake Hager brings out an actual goat. Santana and Ortiz have like a basket of like Vicks VapoRub and candles and weird stuff. And then they eventually give him a bandana and make him an official Boricua. I was like, if Savio turns up, this
I
show's
would
gonna
have
take a
popped
turn.
so hard for Savio. You even, I think you would have popped if Savio Vega came out.
I think Jericho's probably the only man who could rehabilitate Savio Vega to me. Yeah, probably. And if they'd
I
sang the
mean,
whole.
Soul Train Jones and Savio Vega together at a celebration for Le Champion. Are you saying you wouldn't watch that?
I mean, there is a part of me that would pop for the Boricua's music as well. Like, if they managed to get
Of
the rights to that.
course. What if they got Miguel Perez?
God, don't invoke that hair. Can you imagine how much hair he has in his back now? After all these years? So they're all bringing out the different stuff, and then there's a big present. We're like, who is it? Who's going to be in there? And it's basically his dad, Ted Irvin, who comes out and talks about it's great to be here in New York, and it's like Northern Chicago dad, and then he makes fun of the Blackhawks. And he gives all the members of the Inner Circle the Rangers jerseys. Then they bring Justin Roberts in to read a note out, and he ends up getting beaten up. This was magic. I thought this was like somebody had said to me recently. It was like a "This Is Your Life," and I was like, "No, this one was good though. Like this was not a 29-minute like boredom fest. Like all the stuff seemed to be working, and the crowd were really into it, and there was different elements to it." I was gonna ask how you felt this because I don't know if this is really your. I feel this is either really gonna be your thing or really not gonna be your thing.
It was really long. And it kept going on and kept going on. And I did get This Is Your Life vibes. Like, it wasn't nearly that bad because, like, the segments worked okay. Like, when they were, like, giving him the gift basket and stuff, I thought that was just kind of like, okay, we're killing time here. You know, I liked his interaction with Sammy Guevara. I liked him having a little bit of the bubbly.com, which, like, crashed the website, and then the bubbly sold out for the day. I just looked on the website just now as we were talking. It is back in stock. I am able to order it if I wanted to, which I don't because it's Knocking Point, so, like, whatever. But it there were parts of it that were funny. I liked his dad being in the box, wearing a Rangers jersey and being like, "It's great to be back in New York," and he's like, "We're in Chicago, home of the Blackhawks." What? Local sports references, when I understand them, are humorous, and sometimes even if I don't understand them, it's like I get what they're doing. It's fine. But it did kind of go on for me. Like, it wasn't. Nothing about it was snappy. Nothing about it was concise, and. Because I just kind of wanted to, like, move on with things. I was like, why is this still happening? So, I mean, I love how extra it was. I love the inflatable animals. I love that Jake Hager had a goat and called it Chris Jericho-goat. I thought that was pretty funny. But it's just, it felt like if it would have been 10 minutes, I would have enjoyed it more than 16 or 17.
I think the Santana Ortiz stuff wasn't as good, but yeah, it really worked for me. I loved all of it. It was I don't know. I'm it's not that often that there's for me that there's comedy segments in wrestling that work really well for me, and this one did for the most part. So I think because the Jericho parts of AEW are one of my favorite parts, that I'm always kind of like, I'll go with however long you want to go. Like, you give me how much you want to give me.
Well, Jericho's another example of what we were just talking about with veteran people being used to the best of their ability, right? Like, Jericho is absolutely integral to AEW at this point, but he's also building other stars. Like, he has this group of people around him. He's made Sammy Guevara into more of a thing. He's made, I mean, like, him facing Darby Allin, even though Darby Allin didn't win the match, like, that was a great fucking match. So it was really great to see, right? And I think Jericho's doing, again, great work. It is disgusting how good he is at his job. It's just the segment was quite long-winded for me personally.
And we obviously, and then Jericho was also in the main event, but it was Jericho and Scorpio Sky. I always like seeing like a mid-card guy, a mid-card babyface against the top heel for the title. Like, I always kind of gravitate to those kind of matches, like especially seeing like Darby Allin and Jericho, seeing Scorpio Sky and Jericho. So those matches I think are always really fun because they don't feel like they're supposed to really fit within the universe of what it is you're watching.
But they set that match up so perfectly in the universe, having Scorpio Sky get a pinfall victory over Jericho. So it made sense that, you know, Jericho would goad him into a title match, and that Scorpio Sky could go toe to toe with him, but then ultimately fail in singles action because he's a tag team specialist.
Yeah, and you know, I like Cody had done an interview recently. He said that, you know, when they book stuff, they book back the way for the stuff. So I can imagine they were just like, we want to do Scorpio Sky and Jericho. How do we do it? And then built the other stuff, which is how, you know, when you watch long-term wrestling shows, that should happen fairly often and pretty regularly. So, what did you make of the match with Scorpio Sky? Obviously, he didn't get the win, and he kind of came up short. But I thought he put in a good effort, and I'm really digging the Jericho heel champion matches where he's not like he has kind of become Hollywood Chris Jericho in some ways.
Oh, he's absolutely become Hollywood Chris Jericho. I mean, without a Hollywood career, but I guess
As
he's
weight
rock
belt.
star Chris Jericho with a weight belt. Yes. I liked the match. I thought it was very good. I mean, Chris Jericho can obviously still wrestle. He can obviously still go. And Scorpio Sky is great. He's incredibly talented. And I think that he's someone that facing Jericho didn't look like he didn't belong there. Like, he looked like he absolutely belonged there and could hang with him. So I think that's doing well to establish Scorpio Sky a little bit more, and also, like, validate the tag team championships, because one of the guys who holds those belts is really, really top tier. So, I mean, I liked it. It wasn't like my favorite match that I saw on the night or anything like that, but it's hard to find, like, really bad wrestling on a Wednesday night nowadays. Like, everything's kind of good. Wednesday nights are great. It's a lot all at once, but it's really
Yeah,
great.
Wednesday night's really good. Yeah, so that was fun too. And then the big story is at the end of the match when Jericho's kind of, you know, he's triumphant and he's beaten everybody, that Jon Moxley comes through the crowd and just stares at him, and they have this kind of long face off. Yeah, that really worked for me. I was kind of hoping Moxley would be the guy to be the next Jericho opponent. What do you make of the choice of Moxley being the next contender?
I'm here for it. Absolutely here for it. I think Mox versus Jericho could be really interesting. I think they could have awesome promo battles. I'm doubting this one's going to end with like a cage match with things hanging from it. I don't think Mitch the Potted Plant is going to be making an appearance in this
A
particular
Moxley
feud.
Mayhem match?
A Moxley Mayhem match. Yeah, I don't think that that's going to be the way they go. Although, would you totally pop for a Mitch the Plant reference? Because I would,
I mean,
100%.
I'm sure we're gonna get one.
I'm sure that we will because they're both very self-referential, but I think it could be great, and they both exude star power, right? Like I've really enjoyed what Jon Moxley's been doing in AEW. Like I liked his match with who did he fight at the
Kenny
last one? Why am I
Omega.
blanking?
Kenny Omega.
What?
Kenny
With Kenny
Omega.
Omega. Yeah, I loved Moxley Kenny Omega. I thought it was great.
Maybe if
So
you were in the UK, I mean, is there any way you can, hear Kenny Omega talk about that match?
I mean, it's interesting. I think that you could. Isn't there a goodbye and good night tour happening in April?
If in April you're struggling for something to do, maybe you have a loved one that needs a Christmas present, or maybe you just want to get your hole. But whatever the case, bring them
I
along.
feel like
Could
I could go to insidetheropes.co.uk/tickets and potentially purchase tickets to that event.
I feel that you should. And there's other events on Jim Ross and Conrad Thompson, Mick Foley next week. There's a plethora of entertainment needs for you live in the UK. If you're in Ireland, stop messaging me. So,
No, there are no Ireland dates.
Any Ireland dates? I would mention them if there was. Or like, so it's the ones that just are so passive aggressive that it's just like Belfast. Like, is that a question? Is it just they write the
I
sentence?
love how it's always just a statement.
Oh my, yeah, it is. But then the thing, if you ever try and come back and so somebody said, why do you never do the Midlands? And I was like, we've been to Birmingham 3 times in the last 18 months, so I think that we've tried.
And it
And
hasn't gone
yeah, so
super well.
I mean, we will not be back in Birmingham. That's just the end of it because every time it's drawn significantly less than the other cities for the same talent. So, you just kind of have to make a business decision. But somebody was like, why don't you just bring the big names here? And it's like, because the small names have to draw well for it to be worth doing the big names. That's how you do it. So, anyway, so
It
yeah,
is a whole thing. I
it's a
just
whole
don't
thing.
understand because like people in the UK are like, oh, but it's an hour and a half away. Like I drive an hour and a half to go to a family party on a day. Like it's not that far, but
You
whatever. I
guys
live
are
in
you guys
America.
do
It's
long
big.
drives. You guys do very long drives.
I mean, I drive to Chicago for a show. Like I'll drive 3 hours, go to a show, and drive home.
Anyway, so yeah, we're here for Moxley and Jericho is our point.
Yeah, absolutely here for Moxley and Jericho. I think it's going to be great. And I look forward to their promo battles. And I kind of like badass Jon Moxley, who, like, he's really kind of found his groove in AEW, I kind of feel. Like, he has some wins under his belt and he has been victorious. And I think, that makes sense too, because he's someone who has a good win-loss record. It makes sense that he would be able to challenge Chris Jericho, because you don't want someone who's been losing a bunch, because there's like wins matter in this company. So him having victories, even though his victory over Kenny Omega doesn't count, he still has it, and we still know that it happened. So momentum-wise, it matters. And then he's had victories since, so it makes the sense. I like it.
We also saw Cody Rhodes return. He had his first match against a jobber called Matt Nix. He got the win very quickly, but the real story of the match was when he basically called out MJF that he got attacked by The Butcher and The Blade, who I've heard of them. Is it you that's told me about them?
Maybe.
Maybe it's because I've asked about Pepper from TNA, and I got told that
Oh,
he's
Rex and
now.
Sutter.
Yeah, and that's I got told he was doing a tag team thing. I'm sure it was The Butcher and the Blade. So they come in and do some offense on Cody. They come in through the ring. They bring in Allie, who's now got like a bunny face thing mask on. I guess she's gonna be their
They're Butcher,
manager.
Blade, and Bunny now.
Butcher, Blade, and Bunny. I mean, it's nice to see a new debut. I'm not really sure how it makes that much sense that more people are just attacking Cody. I mean, I guess we might get an explanation for that, but I mean, another team. I mean, another team can't hurt, and they've kind of. I mean, one of the guys is losing a battle with his hair in a real sense that he needs an intervention, but they look
It
good.
actually works for me on him. Like, I mean, that combined with the monocle, I love his aesthetic. I think he's great.
Anyone who comes out with a monocle, like, it's hard to not love them.
Exactly. No, I love Butcher and the Blade. I think they are fantastic. I've seen them live a couple times and they're always really great. So I was happy to see them. Like when I was watching AEW the first time, when I was kind of like watching both shows, my feed cut out just before The Butcher and the Blade, but I went on Twitter and I saw that they had debuted and I got really, really excited. I'm totally here for them being in AEW. I think it is weird that everyone's just kind of attacking Cody. So I was wondering if Butcher and the Blade are going to be aligned with the Inner Circle or if something is going to happen with that. I wasn't super sure, but maybe they'll explain it. I don't know. Maybe Cody's just a target because they're like, he's a big star. Everyone loves him. We will attack him and take him out because he is the boss. And then maybe he will make, like, let us do what we want to do, which is sort of counterintuitive because I don't know why he would be on your side if you just attacked him. But I like them. I like them a lot as a team, and I'm here for more teams. And obviously, AEW is really trying to distinguish themselves from WWE by having a robust and thriving tag team division as opposed to just putting it on the back burner and killing it all the time.
We also had on the show the Kenny Omega and Pac match, with Kenny Omega actually getting the win over Pac. So they're kind of one apiece now, because obviously Pac got the big win over Omega at All Out, replacing Moxley. Omega was kind of celebrating. I'm hoping that this is going to be the beginning of a story for Omega, because he kind of feels like he's not had the story yet in AEW. Things have kind of, he did have the match with Jericho at Double or Nothing, but nobody really talks about that match. He was supposed to have the match with Moxley, it turned into the one with Pac, and then he had the divisive match at Full Gear. I'm hoping it means something for him, because I think he's yet to really click yet like the other guys have.
Yeah, I mean, this was kind of him getting retribution against Pac because Pac has beaten him before, right? And I think you're right that Kenny Omega hasn't had the story in AEW. And I think that that's kind of secretly the story, is that he hasn't had a big story and that he hasn't been that prominent and that he is trying to work himself back up to prominence. Like, I think that coming back to Kenny Omega versus champion, like if you wanted to go back to Omega versus Jericho in a year or something like that, after Kenny's been on this journey of self-discovery and retribution, could be really interesting. I mean, they had a great match because of course they did, because they're both very, very good at wrestling. But I don't know, like I wasn't super invested, and that's part of the hard thing, is that I like the idea of a journey of retribution, and I like the idea of someone who's been kind of like beaten down and like working his way back up into the main event spotlight, main event status, whatever. But it does a little bit make me lose interest, I think, because there are, again, like there are so many wrestling things competing for my time and economy that if someone's not one of my dudes, then it is harder to pay attention to them. And Kenny Omega's been someone that I really, really like and really, really admire. And I mean, I have a Kenny Omega pin on my bag because David McCutcheon bought it for me after All In, which is really, really sweet. And I love Kenny Omega. I think he's great. But I would like to see the story start to click a little bit more, I guess. Like, I want that to be more forefront. I think everyone kind of sees that it's a slow burn story with him, but I want him to start showing a little bit more fire and passion about it.
That's fair. I mean, obviously, I think the next pay-per-view is going to be in February, so I assume, like, kind of soonish, we'll start to see whoever maybe Omega's going to go after. And there's not a lot of guys on the roster, like, not a lot of big names, so it'll be curious to see if his big story ends up being with somebody more up-and-coming rather than
Well, they
somebody
are still in a
established.
building phase of the company, right? Like they just debuted like not even 2 months ago. So I get that too. Like I'm willing to grant them leeway and be like, why isn't everything fully established and like full-fledged whatever? Like, of course it's not. Of course there are going to be new debuts. Of course there are going to be new character things. Of course people are still learning and growing and changing at this point, kind of figuring out their footing because it's a very new company. So we're still kind of figuring that out. Also, I just had a really like cool idea. So like, you know
You
how
know how
Allie
Allie
is
is
the
the bunny.
bunny? You know how Allie and Brandi Rhodes had that like thing before where it was like, I have to beat you and I have to beat you, and they had their whole feud. Like, can you imagine Allie as the bunny going up against Brandi Rhodes with Awesome Kong and collecting hair and stuff and all the interactions that could happen?
That could be fun. That could be fun.
I
Yeah,
think
I'd
that
be
would be
into
a good
that.
time.
Yeah, because at this point we didn't see Brandy and Kong this week, but I guess we'll maybe see them next week. The other thing I wanted to mention about the show was we did see MJF and Hangman Page have the match for the Diamond Dozen ring, and MJF gets the win with the Crossroads. I mean, it was a bad attempt, but it was a
Was a
Crossroads.
Crossroads adjacent.
And then DDP comes out to present the ring. DDP's so over. And then he's going to present the
Yeah.
ring. And he tells MJF that how disappointing what he did to Cody was, and then he gets in his face, and then Wardlow ends up kind of getting into Paige's face, and DDP, sorry, threatens to kick his ass, and then refs get involved or separate them all. And like, I know this might not be a popular opinion. I now want to see Diamond Dallas Page versus MJF, and I did not know this is where my mind was going to end up. But like, DDP is like a hero in this company, and I don't know quite how we got here, but I'm happy for the guy.
Yeah, no, it's great to see him being so popular and being useful on the show. I can't say that I necessarily want to see DDP versus MJF. Like, if that happened, it would have to be a rather short affair, and MJF would have to kill him in a dastardly, dastardly way, and then, like, I don't know, be better than him, and we know it. But I think that this is a good use of DDP, though. I think he is a very useful character and a useful addition to AEW. I think him being aligned with Cody is part of why he's so incredibly popular. Also, like, people love DDP, right? Like, he's a real life good dude who's like saved people's lives and helps them out and is great. So it's hard to boo the guy. Like, you have to love him for everything that he's done for wrestling, even just like behind the scenes and not necessarily in his own career. But yeah, like MJF and Wardlow together, I really, really like. I like that Wardlow is kind of his big bodyguard. I like that MJF is just the most smug of motherfuckers. He's just such an asshole. I want to see him get kicked in the face. Like, would I pop for a diamond cutter to MJF? Of course I would.
I mean, we're all
Do I
here for
necessarily,
one.
like, of course. And like, do I want to see a full match? Not necessarily, because I don't want to ruin the magic. But yes, a diamond cutter to MJF would be super, super fun, as long as it doesn't come across as like DDP has clearly physically bested MJF and is like the better. Because I don't want them to devolve into that. I don't want it to be like the stars of yesterday are more important than the people that you like. And I don't think AEW has even like come close to that territory. So I just kind of want them to stay away from it. But like, having DDP have to present the diamond ring to MJF, and he clearly didn't want to, but he's like, this is the job that I'm here to do, and MJF just reveling in it was, I thought it was great. It was great character dynamic.
Yeah, it was really strong, and yeah, I would kind of like to see the match, a shorter match. I just want to see a diamond cutter on MJF, and then of course MJF can kill him after that. What do you think is the AEW show overall? Where would your thumb be?
It's a thumbs up show. I mean, like, also, it was really good to see Chris Statlander on the show again. Really, really happy for her. So happy that she's getting so much of a spotlight. She teamed with Hikaru Shida against Emi Sakura and Bea Priestley. And Bea Priestley, I kind of keep forgetting about, if I'm honest. But I mean, I'm a big Emi Sakura fan. I think she's great. I think that her gimmick works, Ollie. Sorry. But yeah, like Chris Statlander just being like one of my favorite people who's kind of come onto my radar in the past year or so. It's really cool to see her in AEW, and I think it means good things for her. So yes, that was another positive.
I was gonna say the last thing I was gonna say. I also thought it was a thumbs up show. I really enjoyed both shows. So the highest grossing merchandise seller in all of WWE right now is Bray Wyatt, which is fantastic. Good for him. And they're now selling the lanterns at the show, which is
Oh, are they?
insane.
That's like the making of the stuff of nightmares, to see a bunch of severed heads in the crowd.
I mean, I will be purchasing one.
I'm here for it.
But yeah, so congratulations to Bray Wyatt. We should maybe play out his music actually, since he's the number one merch seller in the company. I know you need
And it's
to
a
go.
great tune.
It is great. I know you need to go to work, and I need to go as well. But give us the plug, Sandra.
Okay, you can follow me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes is where you can find tons of bonus content, including the ITR Overrun, where we just talk more wrestling chat, which we will be recording soon/tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, we'll get some questions up.
And I mean, like, tons of bonus content on Patreon. And also, that allows us to do what we do. That's, you know, how I get paid to do this, so I can actually, like, justify watching so much wrestling in my week, because it's crazy. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes is where you can find tons of interview content, videos. You can watch live streams with Kenny and Ollie on Wednesday nights, watching NXT and AEW and drinking, which is a good time. And InsideTheRopes.co.uk/tickets, as we mentioned before, to see all of the great Inside the Ropes live events.
There you go. So we hope you enjoy your weekend. Have a good time. Join us over on Patreon for the Overrun. And on Monday, we will be covering the Retro Raw, where Stephanie McMahon's marriage to Andrew is
Ends in
scheduled.
wedded bliss, and they live happily ever after.
It's scheduled. It's scheduled to happen. But yeah, thanks for
I can't
listening.
imagine what could possibly go wrong for two kids in love.
Poor test. Anyway, here's The
Right.
Fiend. Bye, everybody.
Bye.